Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith. He's going the distance. He's going
for speed. She's all alone. So it's been 46 years since Congress originally passed the Equal Rights Amendment to the Constitution, and still we remain at this hour one state short of ratification. As you may remember, Illinois just recently moved us one step closer. And this week you had Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney and actress Alyssa Milano on Capitol Hill pushing for its final passage. And here to share some thoughts on the amendment and what we need to be doing to move this forward, I've asked Maureen Shaw to come talk with us. She is a respected writer and opinion journalist. Maureen, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
I am good. You know, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on this? Is this a good thing? Is this now the time to be moving this forward?
It should have been time, you know, 3 decades ago. Yes, this is actually fantastic news. As you just mentioned, Illinois became the 37th of the 38 states required to ratify it on May 31st. And we need one more state to step up to the plate. And it looks like Virginia is going to be the state that activists are targeting next to be the final state needed to ratify it.
Now, I was going to ask, who do we focus on? Who do we beat up on now?
So of the, I believe it's now 13 states that haven't ratified it, most of them are in the very deep South.
Gee, I'm surprised.
Shocker, I know. But Virginia is one of them. And seeing that Virginia has moved from very much a deep red state to more of a purple state, I think it's giving us hope that Virginia has a good chance of stepping up to the plate.
It just seems to me that it should pass, since women are the majority. I mean, there are more women than are men, and if they would just vote, maybe we would have more of a sane kind of politics. You know, I've been saying for a long time, I'm ready for women to take over, because look, they can't do any worse than men have done. So let's give it a shot.
Well, it's not for lack of trying. There is certainly not equal representation in all levels of politics, which is what we need in order to pass these types of laws. So, I'm always a proponent of, you know, voting for women so long as they're the right women.
Wouldn't want someone like Phyllis Schlafly to be running things. Because, and the reason I bring her up is, you know, her claim to fame is she's the reason that the Equal Rights Amendment didn't actually pass.
I know. And what's interesting is I have these conversations quite frequently. My family's very conservative. I'm kind of the lone liberal sheep here. And my parents are very much like of the mindset, oh, this woman, you know, was just going to be the head of the CIA. Isn't that great? Well, I love seeing women come into leadership positions, but she's not the right woman, per se. And it goes back to even when Sarah Palin was a vice presidential candidate, same story, you know.
No, I'm with you.
Not the right woman.
No, I look at the woman who's, you know, now the head of the CIA, you know, kind of blows my whole theory that women would be a little saner and maybe not so much of war hawkish and you know, warmongers and doing horrible things. You know, I mean, she was, you know, part of the torture stuff. So it kind of blows that mother nurturing kind of theory right out of the water.
Right. Well, I mean, you don't have to necessarily be a mothering, nurturing woman to be a right woman. But by all means, I don't agree with her politics and approach to things like torture, for example.
Right.
But getting back to your original question, I think, you know, we really just need more of the right women lifted up and elected into office. Right now is a historic moment. More women than ever are running for office in this country, from the hyper-local level to the federal level. So you never know what the midterms might bring. This might be our year for the ERA.
Well, I mean, you're running for something, right?
I am indeed. I am running for my local town council.
And, you know, everyone needs to, you know, I've been saying this for a while, you know, run for, especially those positions, because those are the ones that affect your life most certainly every day. President, not so much every day, but your local dog catcher, your local town council, your local inspectors, those are the jobs that, those are the ones that, that affect you every single day.
You're absolutely right. In the case of my town, there has not been a Democrat on the governing body since 1973.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Where in New Jersey do you live?
I'm in Allendale, New Jersey, which is only 20 miles from the city, from New York City. So it's kind of a conservative pocket, but more and more Democrats are kind of coming out of the woodwork. So, you know, and a lot of that, I think, is spurred by what's happening at the national level. People are just not happy. And we're seeing even locally, some, you know, registered Republicans are really becoming open to hearing what Democrats have to say.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was just reading something the other day. It said New Jersey may not have a Republican in their congressional delegation. That's how far it's gone.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we lived 8 years under Chris Christie, and now we have Governor Phil Murphy, who, you know, his first orders of business are sweeping gun control legislation, reinstating funding for Planned Parenthood, which Christie had decimated. So we're seeing this kind of revival of liberal progressive values in the state, which is really heartening.
Yeah, and I'm sure he won't close the Fort Lee exit to the George Washington Bridge.
No,
yeah, I got to be honest. You know, I thought the perfect penalty for that would have been to take whoever was involved, drop them at the nearest truck stop, and if they got out alive, that was their punishment.
Let them walk home. Right?
You know, if they could make it home, then they'd be okay. But let me ask you, going back to the ERA, because I've had a bunch of people ask me, you know, why do we need this? Why do we need something specific like this when you have the 14th Amendment to the Constitution that supposedly guarantees everyone, every citizen, equal protection under the law?
Right. So the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment first applied to sex discrimination only in 1971, and it's never been interpreted to grant equal rights on the basis of sex in a uniform and inclusive way that an Equal Rights Amendment would. You know, the 14th Amendment was obviously implemented well before the 19th Amendment, which guarantees women the right to vote. So surely it was not designed and meant to apply for women or to women. And something else to keep in mind is the Equal Protection Clause of, you know, the 14th Amendment only applies to state and local governments. It is not a federally enshrined protection.
Okay.
There's so many reasons, I mean, why we would need an ERA. You know, it would clarify sex discrimination jurisprudence. It would give a strong legal defense against rollback of advances in women's rights that have been achieved in the last, you know, 50 years, which we're seeing are being chipped away at left and right by this administration.
Well, and the Republican Party as a whole. You know, I tell my daughters, I tell my oldest daughter all the time, look, I have two daughters, and, you know, I want, you know, equal opportunity for them. I want them to be able to go as far as their talents will take them without being harassed or intimidated or pushed down. But I keep telling them, I keep telling her that, look, there's a movement in this country to move you back to barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. And it's not just taking away your right to choose. It's, you know, taking your right to birth control away, your right to vote away. Mm-hmm. It's all of that stuff.
But that movement is coming head to head with what I think is an even stronger movement, which is the Me Too movement. And women have just had it. I think this is the first time I've been an activist and a feminist for as long as I can remember. And this is the first time I feel like this is moving forward at exponential speed compared to movements in the past where it's usually, you know, two steps forward, one step back.
Right.
This, I feel like we're just marching ahead. And collectively, we just, I think, have gotten to the point of raising each other up and empowering each other is taking precedence, which is moving this Me Too movement and women's rights ahead, even though we're facing an onslaught from the GOP and the Trump administration.
Yeah, I hope you're right. You know, because look, I have a 16-year-old daughter, and you know, she wants to be a chef. Her, you know, that's her passion. And so we got her an internship with the local chef here, who's, you know, internationally recognized, and it's one of the top restaurants in the area. And you know, she's been working there, and you know, she came home and told my wife that you know some guys like my age and older, you know, are hitting on her, and you know, rubbing her arm, and you know asking her for her phone number. And you know, I said, you should give them a phone number, give them mine. I'd be happy to set up a date. But you know, I'm like, you know, she shouldn't have to put up with this, you know, to pursue her passions. And you know, as we talk to people, you find out that, you know, in the chef world, in that world, in food service and all of that, sexual harassment is just rampant. And
it's everywhere.
And it was one of these things where, you know, my daughter, as we were talking to her about it, she knew it was wrong. She wanted to stand up for herself. And in this this moment of, you know, I was kind of proud of her on one vein, and you know, she wanted to push back, but she feared that if she did, it would harm the waitress's tip, who needed the money to take care of her kids. And so she put up with it and didn't say anything and just kind of let it go. And I'm like, no, your generation stops this. Your generation is the one that can change the world. Don't allow yourself to be put in that kind of stranglehold, or am I wrong?
No, you're right. It is very difficult. I've experienced sexual harassment in the workforce when I was younger, in my early 20s. And it can be frustrating because there are so many reasons not to say something from a very introspective, personal perspective. You know, you don't want to lose your job. You don't want to make things worse for coworkers, your daughter's concerns. But you know, now that I'm older and can step back and look at the bigger picture, you know, it's vital to speak up and say something. Of course, I say that from the comfort of my, you know, white middle class self, you know, and everybody's very different. And there are certain factors that are going to influence a situation, whether that's, you know, the industry you're in, if you're a migrant worker, for example, if you're a person of color, if you're, you know, there's so many other factors that go into the type of harassment you might be facing on the job, whether or not you feel empowered and have a support network to stand up and say something. So it's, you know, I like to think and say, and I teach my daughter, who's 5, to stand up and speak out no matter what, you know.
Yeah.
But again, that's easy for me to say because I do recognize I come from a certain place of privilege that others might not.
Yeah, I thought my wife had the best. As were my first reaction, you know, as any alpha male type mentality would be, is I just want to grab somebody and strangle them, which, you know, doesn't work. Not all the time. But my wife said, you know, just hand them a menu and ask them where on the menu they find her. Which I thought was kind of clever, kind of interesting.
That is very clever.
But, you know, it does come back to that, you know, she shouldn't have to tolerate it. Now, the question that I got when I did this, you know, I did this segment for our TV show, and I got a whole bunch of guys going, okay, well, where do we start drawing the line? Where is it, is flirting no longer something that we allow? And where's the line between flirting and sexual harassment? Or isn't there one? And this is one of those questions that I actually don't have an answer for. So I'm curious if you have a thought.
Oh, boy, that's a tough one.
Because, you know, what the emails I got from people were, you know, I met my wife at work. And the one guy sticks out in my mind. He said, I met my wife at work. You know, we had been flirting with each other for months. In today's environment, he claims that would be considered sexual harassment. And I don't know if it is or it isn't. You know, I don't know the level of, you know, whatever that was. But, you know, it's an interesting question because I think we're at a time where, you know, most men want to be on the right side of this issue. Most men want to support their women. They want to make sure their daughters aren't harassed and intimidated. But they also look at themselves and go, you know, maybe am I guilty of some of this stuff? And, you know, where is this line for me even?
But that's a great first step. even now that this has been raised in a collective consciousness for men to stop and think, is this appropriate? Is this not appropriate? It might not, you might not get it 100% of the time, but the fact that you're stopping and thinking about it is a really good first step. And in terms of what that person who emailed you saying he met his wife at work and they were flirting, you know, that sounds consensual to me. And so you have to take it case by case a lot of times, but it's also important to look at power dynamics, right? If you're a 50-year-old chef and you're rubbing up on or flirting with a 16-year-old in your restaurant, that's clearly an abuse of a power dynamic and it's inappropriate. So looking at things like that, I think, is important. It has to be contextualized. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that would warrant a beating and me being behind bars for a little while. But that's a whole other conversation for another day. But, you know, it's one of these weird things. And, you know, I got a whole bunch of responses on this, you know, to where, you know, I've never actually asked a waitress for her phone number. I just never, you know, I never imposed like that because, you know, they're just doing a job. But some people have. And look, I know people who have actually gotten them. So it's this weird kind of world that I think we need to work through. And I think by having these conversations, as uncomfortable as they can be, I think is important.
Absolutely. To have that communication. And like I said, the fact that you're thinking about it, that alpha males are starting to think, oh, crap, have I done something like that? Am I engaging in that behavior now? That kind of introspection is really valuable.
And it's something I think that, you know, look, because none of us want our wives or our daughters or sisters or anyone harassed. But, you know, as the one person said, I wish women would tell me what they want. And I don't know. I, you know, it's a weird kind of moment I think we're in. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it will be. I'm encouraged by it. There are going to be missteps. There's going to be stumbles on both sides. But I think, generally speaking, this is such a positive movement and positive momentum for women.
No, it's good stuff.
And I'm so glad that, you know, I have, my daughter is almost six, and I'm just so hopeful and thankful that this movement is happening when she's this little, because by the time my daughter's your daughter's age, I'm hoping that she won't have to face things like sexual harassment when she starts to work or things like that.
I hope so too.
It's a pipe dream, but
I hope so too. Look, I had hoped my daughter wouldn't face it, but you know, I give her credit for being mature enough to come to her mother and say, "Hey, this is going on," and for being mature
enough,
you know, on all of this. So you know, there's a bunch of this that, you know, I'm proud of the job my wife has done in raising our daughter, to be, you know, a mature young woman. And so last question I have for you, you know, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there going, you know, how do you handle those situations? Any advice on how, you know, let's say my daughter handles that kind of a situation, how young women handle a situation where they're being harassed, you know, maybe by people who are on an equal plane, not even people who are superior or have a power dynamic, but even people who are on an even plane. Any advice?
Absolutely. I think the first thing to do, whether it's a peer, a superior, or even, you know, somebody who reports to you, to simply look that person in the face and say, "You're making me uncomfortable."
Pretty simple.
I mean, that's
pretty direct.
It's simple. It's direct. And if you need to, you can escalate it. I had a situation where my superior was sexually harassing me back in my early 20s, and I went to our boss and got no support there. So then I went to HR. You know, you can just keep escalating it if it's appropriate and you're comfortable doing that. But I think a first good step is to simply, it's like a bully, you know, when you're in school and somebody's bullying you, sometimes they, best way to stop it is to confront it.
Yep, bully them back.
So,
I'm with you.
Why wouldn't you?
I'm
know,
with you.
Just be like,
take them out.
You're not. That's
no.
Yeah,
look, one of my
okay.
favorite moments. You know, I had a friend. We were in a bar, and my friend reached over and he grabbed this girl, grabbed her behind, and she turned around and smacked him across his face.
Ooh.
So hard that left a mark. And we even, you know, if, and this is, you know, 35 years ago. If I saw him today, I would still remind him that she smacked him in the face and that he deserved it.
You know, and that's actually another good point, is that if you are a bystander and you're witnessing sexual harassment or any kind of other unwanted type of behavior and advances, and you see that that person who's, you know, getting the brunt of it isn't comfortable but might not have that confidence to speak up, you being a bystander who speaks his voice is also a really great way to be an ally.
There you go. Maybe you get up and you smack him. There's an even better idea.
I'm not advocating smacking.
I knew I liked you. Marina, I appreciate the time and the thoughts and all of that. I hope you'll come back and talk to me again as this continues, because I'm sure it's not going anywhere anytime soon. But we'd love to have you come back again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Good have a stuff. Great rest of your night.
You as well. It was great talking with you, Maureen Shaw. Check out her stuff. If you want to follow her on Twitter, @Maureen Shaw, we'll get a link out to some of the things that she's done. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have a good time.